This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation universe, we are back for the big SummerSlam reaction show. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-host, the Oracle of the WWE, Devin Hales. And, Devin, we had the big SummerSlam show tonight from Toronto, and I know me and you kind of joked about this on and off the air, that this is going to be, you know, another one of those marathon shows. Boy, were we wrong!
Yes, we were. Pleasantly so.
Absolutely.
Well. Very happy with the length. That was a nice surprise, I think.
Yes, Brian Alvarez on Twitter tweeted, "The main show will last 4 hours and 5 minutes." Well, not so much. but the pre-show started, of course, at 5, and the show ended at 10:31. So there was a 5.5 hours altogether, but. Still, this is a big four pay-per-view. We kind of expected to be at least 4 hours, and as far as the main show, and it wasn't. So, and you know, everything that we'll talk about as we go along was paced very well for the most part. Other than the pre-show, let's talk about that first. The first hour of the pre-show was not needed at all. I mean, just a total waste of time. There was no matches during the whole first hour. Basically, all it was to show some videos and have JBL and Sam Roberts do their shtick at ringside. And what I mean, we kind of talked about this before the show started, but why even do this? It made no sense.
It didn't make sense. I suppose, you know, the best argument is that, well, you know, the YouTube viewers or whatever, you know, because there are YouTube viewers.
Well, do a special just YouTube only thing.
You know, yeah, there you go. That's a great point you just said. There you go. Make it a YouTube only thing then. You're right. Don't put it on the network. I mean, of course, nobody has to watch it. And most people don't watch this, you know, pre-show because they're smart. unlike myself. Yeah, it was just a useless hour of, you know, talking heads that didn't really have anything interesting to offer. You know, the typical video packages and whatnot. Just a complete waste of time, in all honesty. It's not really just a bad thing. It wasn't needed, ultimately.
Yeah. I mean, it could at least have one match, but they had to put the three matches in on the 1 hour.
Yeah.
You know, and that's okay because it sucks when they have a match that early in that first hour when there's nobody in the building. So it worked out.
Yes, I believe it was SummerSlam 2017, where I think it was like The Miz and Miztrash versus the Hardys and Jason Jordan. And like, I think the match started at like 5:25 or something.
Yeah.
Eastern. And there was literally maybe 2,500 people in the crowd.
Yeah.
Like, it was disastrous at how little people were in there for that match. And I do think the main reason they probably didn't have any matches in the first hour was because of maybe some of that backlash the last few years. Oh, well, you know, we'll wait till the arena fills up and then have the matches then.
Yeah. Well, they had three matches in the second hour, and we begin with the Cruiserweight title as Drew Gulak defending against Oney Lorcan. And these two guys had some great matches years ago on the indie scene, and here they are again. And this was a really hard-hitting match. I really enjoyed this match. It was the WWE version of one of their indie matches. Lorcan looked good. Like that, he almost bit on a finish there. He should have had him. So, I mean, when they give me the bite like that, I like that. So, I thought Lorcan might pull it out, but no, Gulak hit the Cyclone Crash. 1, 2, 3. Gulak retained. So your thoughts on the match, and was that the right decision for Gulak to retain?
Yeah, I liked the match a lot. It was a very good sprint. It was under 10 minutes. I actually timed out all the matches tonight. No match went 20, by the way. The two longest matches went 16 minutes, which tells you how well the show was paced.
Exactly. I pretty much guarantee I know what the longest match was. We'll talk about that later.
This was very good. I don't think it would quite as, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, I don't think it was quite as good as it could be, but there's a TV match lurking in the future, I bet, that will be probably better. But this was still really good stuff. The crowd that was there got into it. Especially Oni's Hulk up late in the match. The crowd got into that. Some great strikes as usual between those guys. I loved the setup of the finish with the ref distraction and the punch to the throat, which popped me big. I love punches to the throat. That's one of the like awesome heel violent spots that I like, is a punch to the throat. Of course, that set out the Cyclone Crash and Gulak retained. Gulak is a great cruiserweight champion. I'm glad he retained. I think he should have the belt for a long time. I kind of think he should have the belt till Mania, honestly. You know, even that long. I think he's a very credible champion. I think he's somebody you can count on to have quality matches every week on TV and on the big shows. And I also still think he's probably the best in-ring wrestler of 2019 WWE. I think he's perfectly suited to be the champion right now, and I think he's the right guy to be the champion. And if some interesting twists occur in October in terms of 205 Live's future, I think he's a quality champion to have on you know, wherever direction that may go. Of course, that's just rumor and innuendo, as Conrad would say. But I think he's a good fit for champion, and I think he should be champion for a long time.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. He's on a roll right now, that's for sure. All right, Drake Maverick came out looking for R-Truth on the set. He had this little new wanted poster. He was going to leave Toronto as a champion, so he can consummate that marriage of his. And then Truth and Carmella were hiding inside the set. That was a very cool visual. They were hiding inside the glass, and it looked like they were meshed into the graphics. They were eating popcorn, and they got out and throwing popcorn all over the place. Booker T dropped a, oh, hell no, at one point in that. And Drake showed back up. They're throwing popcorn at each other. Drake kind of hurt his knee chasing Truth and Carmella, and they got away. I tell you, these 24/7 segments are something else.
Yeah, if no one has
been more to come out, later too.
I just want to point out they had a title change and a poorly made up set of an OBGYN office on Raw last week. So,
yeah,
they've done some interesting things.
Absolutely, but fans are getting into it, you know, in their own way. For sure. So. It's entertaining. It's entertaining.
Yes, it is.
And again, more on these folks later. All right, next pre-show match was kind of an odd choice. Apollo Crews versus Buddy Murphy. Yes, Buddy Murphy, who can't get on SmackDown, but has a SummerSlam pre-show match coming fresh off of his beating by Roman Reigns on Tuesday. Well, there's a reason why he had the pre-show match. They went about 5 minutes, and Murphy did his big flip dive that, you know, crowd got the crowd into it. And then Eric Rowan came out and beat the hell out of him. Rowan's pissed off because Buddy Murphy name dropped him to Roman Reigns. Powerbomb to the post. Rowan put him out. So that's all we had from this whole scenario tonight. Kind of shocked me that Roman wasn't on the show at all, and Brian was there and watching Rowan, and we didn't have any promo or no. They played a little video during SummerSlam. I was kind of genuinely shocked at that.
Yes. I was too. Roman was in the promotion for this show all over the place, in the video packages and the build-up for the show, and it wasn't on it. I have sort of a theory on this. I'll sort of state it right now and then maybe go into it a little bit further once we talk about the main event. But Roman, Bryan, and that stuff is going to be the focal point of Fox, I think, in the men's main event scene. And that's going to be the big thing that they're going to focus on and center around in terms of the main event stuff going into Fox. And so I think that we're just in the middle of building to that. Tonight was more of a night to focus on other people and other things, I think, ultimately. I think it's a bigger picture thing. And yes, SummerSlam is a big pay-per-view, and it is unusual for somebody of Roman Reigns' caliber not be on this show, but I do think it is a they're looking ahead to Fox, and the Roman angle is the big angle for the fall, and it's a slow build type deal.
Yep. We'll see. We'll definitely see. They had a chance on it to do it, and they didn't do it, so yeah, that could be saving for a little bit later, but we still got, you know, a little less than 2 months before that first show on Fox. So I don't see them dragging it that long. I think something's going to happen before.
Sure.
So we'll see. Elias came out, ripping on Toronto, of course, about the Maple Leafs not winning the Stanley Cup. Talk about the Blue Jays. He goes talk about the Raptors, though. Edge comes out, big pop, hometown pop, and Edge speared him. Which was very interesting to me because, of course, we all know about Edge's neck injury that forced him to retire from wrestling. I was there at his retirement match at WrestleMania at the George Dome against Alberto Del Rio. And I don't remember him ever doing anything physical since then. And here he is spearing Elias. Very interesting, huh?
Yes, very, very interesting. I was kind of stunned when I saw it. Immediately after it happened, I thought, when was the last time he ever got physical? And the only time I could think of doesn't even count, really. It was when they had the authority angle. They brought the authority back. Remember when they did like the Edge and Christian GMs of Raw, yeah, or whatever. And I think it was like J&J Security holding Edge down and holding his arms back. That's like the most physical,
yeah,
he has been before tonight in the 8.5 years since he retired. Maybe we're looking into this a little bit too much. I don't know about that. I think there might be something going on here.
I'm not trying to say he's coming back for anything. Sure,
but I do find it very interesting because there's something called, you know, Saudi Arabia money now. And that's something to definitely think about in terms of.
Yeah, I don't see him coming back.
I don't either, because I think it's I think he's pretty content. But I was just so surprised. I think what it was is, you know, they're in Canada. It's a big show. And Edge hasn't done anything physical for a long time, and they just said, "Hey, want to hit a spear like old times' sake that you haven't done in 10 years?" And he was like, "Yeah, sure, let's do it." And that's probably ultimately what it was. Kind of a nice Easter egg surprise.
I guess props to WWE, for allowing him to do it, because, you know, I would say they'd probably be pretty scared. You know, they don't want no serious injury to happen on their watch.
No. Like that, so. Not at all.
So anyway, that was that. All right, our pre-show match. Women's tag titles. Nikki Cross and Alexa Bliss, the new champions, defeated the old champions, the Iconics. Billie Kay and Peyton Royce to retain the titles. Alexa I saw some people say was babyface gear. I don't think she's turned babyface, folks. I just don't. But Yeah, I mean, just so like it seemed like there was a TV match, nothing really to it. I guess just to get the women on the show, and the champs retained. So, yeah, nothing. Pretty much a throwaway match in a lot of ways. It's interesting. I mean, no Nakamura, you know, IC champion at all, you know, around here on anything. So, I mean, the women's tag titles is fine. I got no problem with the women's tag titles being on the show. But, yeah, I mean, Intercontinental title, can't sniff it. But your thoughts on this and whatever.
I mean, it was, you know, the match was whatever. I was happy, you know, to see that there were four women's matches total, including the pre-show on the card. You know, that was nice to see. Six women's matches in WWE total this weekend, actually. Yeah, you know, it was fine. I dug Nikki and Alexa's, you know, outfits. You know, I don't know. I didn't really care too much, you know, for the match, really. You know, it just, you know, it was what it was. I do think Alexa and Nikki have been a good pairing, and I liked their storyline with Bayley, and you know,
it's one of the best both things they've done in the recent months.
Oh yeah, yep.
Because everyone all but thought that, you know, this was going, and even including me, you know, that Alexa was using Nikki for her own personal gain, and while that still may happen, they haven't pulled the trigger on none of that yet, and they've actually had them become good friends, and Nikki's done great. She's really improved her game as a performer outside the ring and all this. It's working.
Yeah.
It's really working.
Oh, yeah. I think they announced it on Twitter. Of course, that changes multiple times a week. apparently, I think, aren't they supposed to face Kairi Sane and Asuka tomorrow for the tag belts?
Well, Raw's not SmackDown. You know, Raw's not SmackDown. Raw's not getting tore up.
Right.
It's funny, isn't it, that SmackDown's the one that's getting tore up multiple times a day of the show.
That's interesting.
Paul Heyman's not in charge of SmackDown. So there you go. All right, so that's that. That's how the pre-show ends. Move all that. All right. The main show starts with Becky Lynch and Natalya for the Raw Women's Title Submission Match. I thought it was a really good match. The crowd was interesting. They were split, but Becky had her fair share of boos, especially when she locked on the sharpshooter. And when she broke Natty's sharpshooter. But, Natty got the Sabro Becky, so they traded their moves off. Becky eventually got to disarm her to get the win. Crowd cheered Becky after the match. I thought this was a fine opener and one of the better Natty performances in a long time. So I know you're a huge fan of Natalya, so you can talk about that and your other thoughts on the match.
This was an awesome. I mean, this was like an excellent match. I kind of thought it might be, oddly enough, because I think a submission match is a safe match for somebody like Natalya to work, right? Because, you know, she's, you know, she kind of bases her matches around the sharpshooter. And, you know, the same with Becky around the disarmer. I'm going to be up front. I think Becky's been terrible all summer. I think she's been terrible at calling her spots in the ring in terms of, you know, the in-ring stuff. I don't think, you know, I mean, obviously Lacey Evans is you know, was a green opponent to have, but I think Becky was faltering a lot.
I get your thoughts on this. So, I mean, Becky was probably better in the angles that she has been in the match.
Right. Yes. Yes. And this was much needed for her. You know, she needed to have a great match. And this was an excellent match. Hot crowd. I loved the mix of brawling and submissions. You know, the feud on TV seemed personal, and they worked the match like it felt, you know, they worked the match like it was personal, which I always appreciate. And they, you know, if you have a feud that seems personal, work the match like it's personal. And they did. Lots of cool submission based stuff, lots of cool brawling, lots of good spots and strong selling from both.
yeah, this was an excellent match, an awesome match. Big thumbs up here for me. I was really pleased with this. Very pleased with it.
It helps that they had all that personal stuff from the past that they could go to with these two, you know, from, you know, working in Japan all the way and, you know, all the way back and all this other stuff. So that helps out. And Natalya did some great promo work. They did a lot of really good stuff online, on online only things. So, yeah, we'll see. I mean, Becky, it's interesting. I know a lot of people were speculating that Sasha Banks was going to show up tonight and get into it with Becky and blah, 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 but it didn't happen. So we'll see where we go from here, huh?
Yep, we'll see.
All right, next. This kind of surprises that they went with this early. Bill Goldberg against Dolph Ziggler. Of course, we all know the whole deal here. Ziggler had been taking his shots at Goldberg on television in recent weeks. And they had shot the angle on Monday to bring Goldberg out to sign the contract and told him he was next. Well, they had their match tonight, and this is exactly what it should have been. Ziggler super kicked him a couple of times. Goldberg was like, fuck that shit. Speared him, jackhammered him, pinned him. 1, 2, 3. Okay. Fans were into it. Short match. What exactly would it need to be? And then Ziggler gets on the mic and calls and says Goldberg basically was like a little baby. He hit like a child. So, of course, Goldberg got back in the ring, speared him again. And I'm going to mention these spears were, Dolph sold them tremendously. He got some height on these spears, too. So, after the second spear, Goldberg walks out, and then this time he walks to the back. Well, Ziggler grabbed the mic again. So anybody can get lucky twice and say Goldberg didn't have the balls to face him and the man. That's why he's a laughingstock in the business. Goldberg comes back out. He picks him up and he brushes him off, and like, he decides, well, I'm just going to walk away. Now, Goldberg's going to run the ropes and then get hit another huge spear, which, like, it took Dolph's soul. And put him down. And then Dolph, like, he wanted to grab the mic again, but they went to a break. So I love this so much. But I'm surprised they went with it this early in the show. So your thoughts on this and the timing of this match?
This is great. Really good presentation. I kind of predicted in my head that Ziggler would like cut like a heel promo before Goldberg came out. And he did. Yeah, perfectly laid out, perfectly done. Post match was a hoot, you know, was a hoot. You know, typical, you know, kind of old school heel gets his comeuppance. I liked it a lot. This was really, really well done. And I'm not a Ziggler fan at all. I can't.
We know Ziggler, that.
But I do think his heel work this summer has actually been really good. I thought it got a little excessive in the Kobe feud, you know, but, you know, generally I think he's cut some really good promos this summer and this was great stuff. And, you know, it was perfect, quintessential Bill Goldberg, which is what, you know, you want to see when you see him. And, it was awesome. I like this a lot. It was very well done.
And now we'll have The Miz and, Dolph Ziggler, you know, on Raw. Yeah. Because, I mean, that feud's really, it started, but it hasn't started, you know? So now we'll get them going against each other. So should be interesting to go from here. But the thing, the thought process that, you know, has been put out there is that Goldberg is going to become like Heyman's version of a Bruno Sammartino type, the old gunslinger that comes in every so often. Back at Undertaker as well. Comes in every so often when needed, you know? Do you think that Goldberg will have any staying power in that type of role?
Maybe for a couple of years. You know, what benefits him is when he works his squashes and you work 2 minutes, it's pretty easy to do. We saw even with the Taker match, which I actually think was a really good first half, but, you know,
when you go more than 5 minutes with 50-year-old Bill Goldberg, things can go pretty badly pretty quickly. So, you know, you'd have to keep it very, very, very limited, you know, maybe for a couple of years, but, you know, you reach a breaking point and it's always a risk. But I do think it's something that could work for a few years.
Yeah. I mean, he looks great.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, he doesn't look old. I mean, he's got a little gray in his facial hair. He doesn't look old. He's in great shape. He can still move. So, I got no problem with it. Just long as they, you know, as long as they, you know, do it the right way. You know, not like the Saudi Arabia shit with Undertaker, which, ugh. We'll see what happens with old Goldberg down the line. Of course, and like I said, Ziggler and Miz about to heat up now, I guess. Next, we get Drake Maverick with the New Day, as New Day told Kofi that they had Drake. So at least that was a little cute. Drake Maverick with a do-rag and a Toronto Raptors jersey, which the other Drake I've never really seen with a do-rag over his head.
No,
at least Drake wasn't in blackface.
Yeah, that's true.
At least we're past that. So, but in all honesty, as tan as Drake Maverick is, he may actually have a darker skin color than the other Drake. Because Drake Maverick is a tan dude. That's for sure. So, it was a cute little segment. And Kofi said he's been waiting a decade for Randy Orton. So, we'll see what happens with that later on. All right, next we have AJ Styles against Ricochet for the U.S. title. We did mention this, but in the pre-show, there was an interesting little segment where the OC met up with Finn Balor, and they offered their services to old Finn. And Finn looked at it, and, you know, he thought about it for a minute and didn't do the click salute at him and none of that stuff. But it was a nice little touch to have them meet each other again. So maybe down the line something will happen. A few, you know, a little feud or whatever. So we'll see how that goes, how it turns out. But they, you know, tease something there. Anyway, AJ and Ricochet here for US title. Ricochet had a full bodysuit on this match. He looked like he was a character from, like, the Black Panther film. It was a cool look. Cool look, different. Gallows and Anderson at ringside. And Ricochet used it at one point, doing a body walk off of him to do a big run on the floor. I mean, that was a cool spot. Crowd was into this. But they kind of died down some, too. It was interesting watching the match from the Heat perspective. I don't know if the crowd didn't want to boo AJ or what, but, I mean, it was a good little match. These two have had better matches, so AJ went clean as a sheet, too, with the Styles Clash. So, definitive win. They kind of put a beating on him after the match, so obviously this feud's going to continue. But, yeah, I mean, Ricochet's probably going to, I mean, I got to think he's going to come out on top in the end, but interesting to see how clean this finish was. So, what are your thoughts on the match and the whole booking of the day?
Well, Ricochet is a better seller than Seth Rollins is. I mean, I actually thought this was might have been the best. Their first match on TV might have been better, but I think this might have been the best AJ Ricochet match so far. I like that they kind of had it around based around selling. Ricochet sold his leg pretty well, and I like that he, you know the cool spots where, like, you know, the springboard close on in one leg. There's only one or two kind of sacrificing of selling spots from Ricochet in the match. Otherwise, I thought he did a solid job, and the finish was great with Ricochet trying the this was like a somersault Rana. Kind of a version of the West Coast Pop in some ways. AJ countered it with the Styles Clash. Pretty brutal stuff, because AJ had to kind of drop him on his on his head to set up for the Styles Clash first. I thought it was a pretty good match. I tend to think, part of me thinks that AJ is going to win this feud and Ricochet is going to move on to something else. I kind of think they're really pushing the OC. A lot of it has to do with the fact that AEW exists, and I think they really want to wrestle a group. And, with AJ as the main mid-card champ, I really think that they really want to push them, and I think AJ is getting a big push for the foreseeable future.
Well, let's see. I mean, I guess they could put him against Rollins, but I don't know. I mean, we just kind of had that.
Right.
So, I don't know. I mean, it's going to be interesting. I mean, Gargano's coming up. Got to. I don't know when, but, I mean, they pretty much did a big send-off at NXT right. on Saturday off the air. And I would hope that that he's going to go to Raw for, because if he goes to SmackDown, he's dead no more.
Yeah.
So he needs to go to the Paul Heyman show where Paul Heyman can use him because Paul Heyman knows how to use it. So, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I just don't think it's over. I really don't. So, we'll see. We'll see what Raw has in store for us Monday night. But, I mean, Ricochet did the job, but it wasn't by any means a bear.
Oh, no.
So that's one thing. No. So, yeah. All right, next we have the Street Profits, and they're about to start doing their shtick when all of a sudden Angelo Dawkins looked and he saw something. And Montez Ford looked and saw the same thing, and they both started doing this music, and they're, with humming and beatboxing and stuff. And it's Nature Boy Ric Flair. And Ric Flair looked really healthy tonight. I'm glad to see Ric looking healthy. And he did his little dance with him, and it was a cute segment. Flair got to do his alligator shoes line, so I like this. And I was glad to see Ric on camera. I thought about Ric the other day, especially when Harley Race died. Ric's contemporaries are dying off, man, and it's sad that we all grow old, and Ric's one of those guys that he hates growing old. But he's losing his friends, his contemporaries, and Harley was one of the guys that was like a mentor to him in a lot of ways too. So I was glad to see them have Ric on camera doing something fun, coming off the Harley situation. So props to them for just having him show up and doing that.
Sure.
So good stuff. All right, next we get an interesting match: SmackDown Women's Title, Bayley defending against Ember Moon. The crowd definitely was not into this match. And, I don't blame them. I mean, they haven't really done anything on SmackDown other than have these two kind of, save each other and act weird about it. And they've done some things. There was no definite defensive babyface and heel, which there really wasn't in the Becky and Natalya thing, which they're both like assholes in that feud. So, it seemed like there was no real protagonist in this whole situation with Bayley and Ember, and the work wasn't as strong. It picked up. There was some big spots later on in the match. So Ember took some big bumps. That belly to belly from the ropes was crazy. But, I think the crowd was wanting more, and there was "We Want Sasha" chants going on during this match too. So, it's the Toronto crowd. They're gonna be a little bit different. They're in Bizarro Land, as Vince would say. So, Bayley won the title. I could have seen Ember winning it, but it really didn't matter in the end who won or lost this match. But we have Bayley retaining. So. Yeah, what's your thoughts on this, and where do we go with Bayley from here?
I actually thought it was a well-worked match. You know, I didn't think it was great or anything. It was a good match. You know, but I agree. You know, I get why the fans went into it. There was no enthralling build to the match. Other than that, I did want to see it. But there was nothing that was really gripping about the build. There was nothing really gripping about either character currently right now either. Although I think Bayley's gotten a lot better this summer. And I think the title reign has helped her tremendously. And I honestly think Sasha going on leave is helped her a lot too, to be honest.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Bayley winning, I think is the right move. I think it's good to give her a long, somewhat significant title reign. I think it helps her confidence. She's one of those wrestlers who, when they are not in their most confident state, they are not very watchable. And her title reign has helped her confidence a lot. And I think she's improving in the ring. And I think she's trying a lot harder and working a lot harder. And I'm mostly pleased with Bayley as champion. But I do want to say that I want to see a compelling feud soon with Bayley as champion. I think we really need, you know, the Alexa feud involving Nikki Cross was fun and compelling, but it was because of Alexa and Nikki. I want to see a feud with Bayley that shows Bayley's strengths and really kind of brings some heat to her matches. That's something that she really needs right now. And I want them to find someone or somebody to give that extra oomph to her matches, because I do think she needs that for sure.
Well, you know, what's the next pay-per-view?
Clash of Champions.
Where is that at?
That is in Nashville, Tennessee.
No.
Is it not?
Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte,
okay. Charlotte is in Charlotte.
Who? Okay. There you go. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? And here's the thing, too. I got to think that now that SummerSlam's over with, and we talked about this on the last reaction show, and I think now even more than ever, I think now Eric Bischoff's going to be fully more engorged in SmackDown. The brand split stuff is right back on again. I think the wild card stuff is done. Or close to done, as close to done as you can get it. I think now we're going to see everybody stick to their shows more. So,
I think so too.
We'll see. All right. Next, Kevin Owens against Shane McMahon. Kevin Owens' career on the line. This was a heated match. Fans were into Kevin Owens. They wanted to cheer him the worst way. And Nash can do that now. He's a babyface. And everybody hated Shane. You know, we got You Can't Wrestle Chance and all that great stuff. So we knew what this was going to be. This is, I mean, Elias comes out the enforcer. This was your, like, McMahon's 20 years ago type match, you know, where you had the Stooges and all that bullshit. It was, you know, full on smoke and mirrors. But this was a really fun match. And, it was a cute little finish where they were teasing the whole chair thing at one point in time. And Owens was going to hit somebody with a chair. But, of course, there was a DQ finish in this match. So if he did it, he would have got disqualified. Well, as he got the referee to finally get rid of the chair, he just gave Shane this big low blow and hit him with a stunner for the pin. I love the finish. What can I say? I thought it was great. So Owens wins. Crowd goes nuts. I thought this was a good little piece of business. So we'll see where they go from here. But Kevin Owens, he's finally picking up that traction now as a character. And the fans are getting into him. I know it's Canada, but the fans are getting into him everywhere. And it looks like he's enjoying himself. So there's a lot of stuff they can do with this guy. So what were your thoughts on all this situation?
Yeah, this was a fun match, entertaining, very much a kind of an abridged version of a McMahon-Austin feud match from 98-99. It didn't overstay its welcome, which I appreciated a lot. It was only like 9 minutes. Yeah, this was a ton of fun. And I also, you know, this was definitely a nod to Austin in terms of Owens. If you remember all the old stipulation crap from the Attitude Era, Austin would break all the rules, you know, in terms of mm-hmm. like the stipulations of the matches. And like, he would always like, it would be totally, you know, fitting of Austin's character to, use a chair and attack the officials, in a match where his career was on the line. So I think that was probably even a purposeful nod to Austin in that sort of sports entertainment style match with the anti-hero, anti-authority babyface. Owens plays it well. And, you know, we talked about this a few months ago when he was in the feud with Kofi for the WWE title, how we were really, you know, pleased to see Owens come back as a babyface around Mania season, and they turned him right back again. I'm sort of convinced that whatever went on with Daniel Bryan, whether he had an injury or not, prevented them from doing a rematch with Kofi and Bryan, and they just decided to give Owens one last quick heel turn before they turned him back. And I think he's right where he needs to be. He's extremely over. And yeah, I'm interested to see where they go with him. He definitely looks to be a big focal point on SmackDown going forward. So there's lots of things you could do.
Yeah, you just got to put all the pieces in place. But I mean, it's, and we'll talk about this later. It seems like that, you know, with this change in creative, that it's time to right some of the mistakes that's been made recently. And that Kevin Owens' turn was a mistake.
Yes.
So, and now they've righted it. So we'll see what happens from here. All right, next, Charlotte Flair and Trish Stratus. Trish, of course, being from Toronto. So her retirement match. So she's going to have the hometown fans behind her. And she was in tremendous physical condition. That's for sure. She put a picture on Instagram showing off her abs, and she looks amazing. Her and Thor Wilson, folks. I mean, those two were fitness models over 20 years ago, and they look better now than they did 20 years ago. It's amazing. It's amazing, those two. You know, just, they're gifted. They are so gifted. And Trish got in here and worked. And was there a little sloppiness? Yes. But I tell you what, Trish looked tremendous here. I mean, she was doing all kinds of stuff. This woman has not worked a singles match since 2011. And she went up there and like she had been working a regular schedule. And man, I loved it. I loved this match. That was great. I thought Charlotte did extremely well being the heel and really, you know, getting over in that regard. And Trish got to do the figure eight on Charlotte as well. So Charlotte gave and gave and gave, and Trish looked great. And of course, Charlotte eventually got the win, which, hey, you're supposed to. Retirement match, the person retiring is supposed to lose. I'm sorry. That's just the way it's supposed to be. You're supposed to put over on your way out. And the crowd chanted, "Thank you, Trish. This is awesome," during the match. So she got a great send-off. And that's what, you know, everybody remember too, you know, the send-off after the match. So really, really strong stuff here, I thought. What were your thoughts on it?
Great match. Arguably the match of the night. In fact, I thought this and Becky Natty probably were the matches of the night. This was an awesome match. Trish was spectacular. Like, she's better now than she was, not only in terms of looks and health-wise, but in terms of in-ring. I think Trish, you know, during her heyday was, you know, kind of underrated, but man, she's a great worker. I mean, she's shown that
2018 in her brief appearances.
I wish she would have worked against all of them. I now want to see her against Becky. I want to see her against
me
Sasha.
Too.
I want to see her against Bayley.
Yeah, I mean, she's exceptional, man.
Bayley openly tweeted out, "Please don't go."
I saw that. I retweeted that. Yeah, this was an excellent match. You know, Charlotte played the cocky heel, mocked her. She was great, trash talking. Trish hit all of her big offense, what you wanted to see. You know, hit the figure eight of her own, which looked awesome. Charlotte kicked out of all that stuff, which is fine. That's how it's supposed to go. You know, that's how it should be. And then she ended up winning with her move and her savvy in the end. That's how it was supposed to be. It was perfectly worked, perfectly booked. Tremendous match. Tremendous stuff. Very, very, very well done. I'm with Bayley. I hope Trish doesn't leave either. Because she was a standout tonight for sure.
Yeah, but I think that
I think so too. But
what a way to go out though. What a way to go out. When people say your retirement match may have been the best match of your career. I mean that's the way to go out. You know? Who could say they retire on top? Not many. Nope. So she'll always have this, that's for sure. All right, next. Kofi Kingston defending the WWE title against Randy Orton. And you say you wrote the times, right?
I didn't.
This had to be the longest match.
I didn't write the specific time, but I want to say it was about probably, I honestly think it barely beat out Charlotte and Trish for length.
It felt like a long
yes,
match.
It did. Sure. Yes, it did.
It's Randy Orton being Randy Orton. And it was a total Orton match. I mean, we got some fun Kofi stuff. But it was a total Orton. They went to the floor at one point. Orton had Kofi there in front of Kofi's family, and he was taunting the family with him. And little did he know that the referee was actually counting. And counting at the normal pace, not the WWE pace. And we got a double count out. And then Kofi went nuts after the match. Got a kendo stick, beat the shit out of Orton, trouble in paradise. But, and so obviously this feud's continuing. Probably all the way to Hell in the Cell. But, yeah, I mean, a double count out finish. They don't pull that one out much. I mean, that's old school right there. So, interesting finish. And, yeah, again, it looks like this feud is going to continue. So, what's your thoughts on it?
I thought the match was starting to get really good. And then they did this double count-out finish, which normally, I mean, I would never be thrilled by or really like that much. But, and this is just for the fans like us, right? You know, not everybody remembers this shit like me. But they did the almost, not quite, there were definitely some twists and differences, but this is the same fucking finish we had with AJ Joe last year. You know, of course, that was a DQ.
Just about, yeah,
but
exactly.
But it was the same thing where Joe was mocking AJ's family and threatening them. And it's the same thing. It was, it was bad. I did not like the finish at all. I thought it was.
You're right.
I thought it was way too repetitive and way too mirroring. I thought it mirrored last year's WWE title match way too much. I'm fine with the feud continuing. I have no problem with that. And I think, you know, a feud like this with a long-term story, whatever, should probably have a few matches in it. But this was not the way to go 2 years in a row on a big show like this. Even though it was separate feuds, separate wrestlers, it was too similar to last year's WWE title match and finish. I did not like that at all. This was the big down. This was the biggest downside of the show tonight. Was the booking of this match. It just wasn't good. I didn't like it. And of course, you know, when you work the Randy Orton match, that slow pace, and then it ends at a double countout. You know, that's also not particularly exciting either. This is just not the way to go, I don't think, in terms of. You know, I mean, they could have had Kofi win on a, you know, flash roll-up, and then Orton beat him up after the match or something. Or, you know, they could have had. There were other ways around what they did, and I just wish they did another way to continue the feud.
There was nobody going to do a clean job in this match. No way, not yet. So, not in a regular type match. They're going to have you're going to have to break up the shits and giggles and smoke and mirrors and all that stuff, the gimmicks. Orton's not doing the clean job. Not like that. Not in a regular fashion. In the end, yes, he will. I don't see him beating Kofi for the title, but we'll see. It's not over yet. So we'll see what happens from here. That's for sure. All right, next we get the best part of the show to me. The final part of this show, the next 30 plus minutes. Finn Balor against The Fiend Bray Wyatt. Finn was in all white, so I'm sure a few people enjoyed that part of the match. So
a few, come on.
And then how the match went. Oh, my goodness. They enjoyed it even more because it was a total brutality. That's what it was. But anyway, we got the entrance of Bray Wyatt. And it's a new version of his old song. And the presentation here was fucking amazing. They hit a home run with this so much. And it's going to be hard for them not to screw this up, because we know what they do. They make stuff become completely regular, but they need to figure out a way not to have this man wrestle on television, I don't think. He only needs to wrestle on pay-per-views. I mean, they cannot do this type of deal on TV all the time. I think it will just cheapen the whole thing, because this whole thing was awesome, man. I mean, the look, the new lantern, I mean, God, the music, the crowd was just into this shit. And he goes in there, and I joked on Twitter, this shouldn't last 2 minutes. It went a little over 2 minutes, but not by much. And Finn did get some offense in, so it wasn't a total squash, but good Lord. I mean, Bray just killed him and got him with that mandible claw, put him out, 1, 2, 3. The lights went out again, then we get the whole Fiend thing, and then he disappears, and the fans chanted, that was awesome. So, total home run for this whole segment, and I'm intrigued to see where we go from here with Bray Wyatt. I mean, Finn Balor is supposed to be taking some time off to go on vacation. Of course, for those who don't know, he's fairly newly engaged, so props to him on that, but so, yeah, he's going to take some time off, do a little vacation. And he did the favor for Bray here. And they got something. They got something with Bray. I just don't know what they're going to do, but they got something there. So, what are your thoughts on the whole shooting match here?
The presentation of The Fiend and Bray Wyatt is incredible. I think one of the biggest criticisms I have of the old Bray Wyatt is he's supposed to be this scary, frightening individual. And he just came across as hammy and lame and like one of those, like, just, I don't know. He
was doing a ripoff. He was doing a ripoff of Robert De Niro, Cape Fear, Waylon Mercy. Yes. And it worked. It worked for a while, and then it just got really, really campy, like you said.
Right. It just got to be a point where he just wasn't believable anymore. This stuff right here is absolutely terrifying. And I have seen multiple tweets of kids, some of our Twitter friends having kids being absolutely terrified of this guy.
There's a dude that writes for SB Nation, Jason Kirk, who I follow, that he tweeted about, you know, when the Fiend showed up, his kids actually run and hid under their table.
He's a legitimately terrifying and frightening character. It's amazing stuff. The presentation is out of this world. That new lantern is legitimately creepy and legitimately looks like a scene from like a graphic horror movie where someone's face is cut off. That just the entire presentation is through the roof. Great. So a few people complain about Finn getting offense in. I think Finn probably had to get a little bit of offense in. I still think the match went perfectly. It was about 2.5 minutes, which is just right about the, you know, the right length. I think someone made a great point as well on Twitter, and I agree with them, that the only time that Bray lost control in the match is when he was doing the deal where the Fiend was kind of battling with probably the, you know, the idea is he's probably battling with the Firefly Fun, you know, Funhouse Nice Bray, and he was doing Bray Wyatt spots, and that cost him for a brief minute. And I like that. Well, I think that's good.
I love that. Yeah. It's character. It's character building. It's showing the inner struggle within.
Yes.
This man is having with his secret, his alter ego.
Yes. And this was very well done. Yeah. They can't do this. He can't wrestle. He cannot wrestle. He can make an appearance once or twice to build up to a match with somebody.
Yes, new angles.
Know, he can't do the entrance. You know, he can do Firefly Funhouse every week, sure. But
he could do Firefly Funhouse and then just show up in the ring and do a move or something like that. That's it. They do what they've been doing. Right. Save the entrance for the shows that matter.
Right. And heck, you know, even if you wanted to, if you really wanted to use them. Only use him every pay-per-view. You know, have him wrestle somebody at Clash of the Champions. That's 5 weeks. You know, yes. Like, you can build to somebody in 5 weeks. Like,
if they're doing all title matches, it's going to be tough.
Oh, sure. Yes. They could do a lot of things with him. There's a guy on SmackDown that they could eventually build to. An Aleister Black Fiend build would be incredible.
But yeah, if they're killing the split, I mean, if they're doing the split right, though again. Right. They're going back hard to that. That'll make that difficult. Oh, sure. But
yeah, I mean, they could do down the line. You know,
there's stuff they could do.
You know, there's a lot of things, a lot of things they could do. I saw a tweet, and we'll get to the main event, but it was from Rovert, and it said. Rollins and the Fiend as one of the, and now I was like, man, I hope not. That would not be good.
Not now. Way too early.
Yeah, that would be bad.
Will that happen? Is that something that could happen in the long run? Yeah, but that way too early.
Yep. But, way too early. So far, so good. This is the Firefly Funhouse stuff started a week or two after Mania. It's been a home run for the last 4 months, which is not something that I can say for Bray Wyatt since like the beginning of the Cena feud in 2014.
He's been reborn, and it's great to see because the guy, I mean, he's lost weight. I mean, he's really put in to work character-wise, doing all the great skits and everything to build this up. And this was the payoff for all that work, and he got out there, and the fans just loved every minute of it. They went crazy. So we'll see where they go from here, for sure. But they got something. They definitely do. And now our main event. Universal Heavyweight title. Brock Lesnar defending against Seth Rollins. Now, I want this match kind of conflicted. I mean, conventional wisdom would say Brock will win the match because Brock lost to Seth Rollins in their last big match. I'm not counting Money in the Bank because that's what it was. I mean, that's a whole different deal. But in their last straight match, Brock Lesnar lost to Seth Rollins, you know, at the 3 curb stomps. So, in very quick time, very shorter. So, conventional wisdom tells me Brock's going to, you know, he's going to beat Seth. But I also thought about that promo Seth cut on Monday, which I thought that was a strong promo. The fans shitting on him was ridiculous. I thought it was a different promo for Seth. He was, you know, in a totally different mode. I liked the whole delivery of that. And he guaranteed victory. He said, I guarantee it. I'm going to beat him. I guarantee it. And saying that made me think that he was going to win this match. So I went in now with my thought process being Seth's going to come out on top. I tell you what, you know, I've done my share of shitting on Brock Lesnar. And, you know, we all have on these shows. It's been pretty fucking ridiculous over the years how Brock has been coddled and treated and all that stuff and how he's gone over on everybody. Let me say this. I give Brock Lesnar a lot of respect and a lot of props tonight. Brock Lesnar went out there and he had a hell of a fucking match tonight. This was the longest Brock Lesnar match in a while.
14 minutes, I believe.
He gave and gave and gave. This dude loves him some Seth Rollins. I tell you that. He loves Seth Rollins. And we've heard, you know, over the years that Brock really likes the smaller guys. I mean, look, who did he lose a title to in 2004 that really started the big thing off was Eddie Guerrero. I mean, Brock Lesnar didn't have the job for Eddie Guerrero, you know? So, I mean, he's put Eddie over. I mean, he's done things for guys that a guy like him, you wouldn't see normally do if they had the clout that Brock has. Nothing involved in this, too, is, you know, Paul Heyman is the boss of Raw. And if anybody's going to get Brock to do anything, it's Paul Heyman. But, I generally think that Brock really likes Seth. Because this dude went out here, I mean, and he did the clean job at Mania to this man. He come out here tonight and put on a hell of a match. Made Seth look good. I mean, the crowd going in this match was booing Seth more than they were cheering. And as the match went along, the crowd was turning more towards Seth until towards the end of the match, the entire crowd was for Seth Rollins. So props to Brock Lesnar in that regard as well. But I love this. This is tremendous. And the spot where Brock is grabs Seth by his tape ribs, the tape, and just carrying him around the ring like a rag doll. Tremendous. God, I love that spot. But, yeah, this is great stuff. And Brock bumped like crazy. Brock, at one point, he looked like, I said on Twitter, he looked like the inside of a watermelon. He was so pink. When Seth hit that big frog splash off the top to the floor, oh, my God. I mean, I thought Brock he might have died right on the spot. But, now they got back in the ring, and, Seth escaped the F5, and then eventually got curb stomped, got him, 1, 2, 3, I popped, the place popped, I think people really realized that this finish actually happened, and Seth Rollins has done something that not many people have ever done. Beaten Brock Lesnar on 2 consecutive major pay-per-views. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? And now it's time to right the wrong. The wrong of how, you know, Seth was booked after WrestleMania. And now Paul Heyman has his turn to book Seth Rollins as champion. I mean, I've seen people talk about, well, why'd they do the whole switch to begin with? This is why they did it. This is why they did it. It's now more important for Seth to have this win in that environment, in that fashion, coming off losing that title the way he did. So Seth needed rehabilitated. I think tonight was a major step in rehabilitating Seth. The Seth-Becky stuff really hurt both of them in a lot of ways. And I think now that they've kind of fleshed that out, Becky got rehabilitated some tonight with, you know, her match with Natty. Seth's been rehabilitated now. And I'm genuinely very interested to see how this is going to go. with Paul Heyman in charge of his title reign, because Brock losing, there's obviously a big thing coming up. There's obviously some big plans. Heyman's got something going on. So, yeah, I loved it. So, what are your thoughts?
Great match. My biggest beef with the match is if I had watched this out of context in terms of, like, the match, I would have liked it even more, but I think it's a Seth Rollins thing where, like, he just gets destroyed and annihilated and he doesn't even sell his ribs. It's not that he didn't know, you know what I mean? It's just a pet peeve of mine. Like, I sometimes, maybe I get stuck on it too much, but that was annoying. Otherwise, the layout was excellent. Brock was amazing in this match. Some awesome spots. The German suplex counter onto the feet into the curb stomp right at the beginning was awesome. The swinging Rollins by the tape was like an incredible spot. The frog splash through the table was brutal as all hell. Great finish. Yeah, this was an awesome match. I'm never going to be the biggest Seth Rollins fan, but I do agree with you that this was a rehabilitation project by Paul Heyman, and it probably was somewhat for Becky as well. And I think that this is sort of the true beginning of the reboot in a lot of ways for both shows. You know, the Roman Reigns mystery attacker angle is I don't know how much, you know, apparently Bischoff hasn't had a lot of control on the SmackDown writing. And apparently, you know, obviously the rumors are Vince has been, you know, ripping up the script 30 minutes before the show, whatever, and like during the show. But, you know, the Roman Reigns mystery attack angle is very much something that you might see in WCW, right? Like, so, you know, we're at the point now where Raw and SmackDown and their new directions are starting to show their new identities as well. And this was a big show in terms of that direction. And going back to the Roman angle and nothing happening tonight, I certainly think they'll have a conclusion as to who attacked Roman before Fox, but I do believe that the Roman Bryan feud will be going through Hell in a Cell, at least. You know, obviously, if it's Bryan, which I suspect it is. And the first SmackDown on Fox is the Friday before Hell in a Cell, which I actually kind of think is a mistake. But that's another discussion altogether. God, that show being 2 days before pay-per-views, that's kind of troublesome in terms of booking. But yeah,
it's a hell of a go-home show.
Yeah.
you know, hook that Fox crowd into
there. You go,
do a big show, hook them in. They're trying to get in the network to watch the
pay-per-view. That's true. Very, very good point.
And one thing that has been mentioned, and we something that, you know, I definitely have pushed in the past in this show. I don't know if it's going to happen because of the way everything's set up, but a lot of people say, well, now this frees up Brock to go to Fox Network and go to SmackDown and beat Kofi for a title. It could happen, but Heyman's the guy on Raw. Heyman's not the creative guy on SmackDown, right. So...
I guess they could
do it. I mean, they could do it, no problem, and Heyman could still be out there as the advocate, but I don't know. It makes sense.
Here's me throwing something up against the wall. It's not really an idea, but it's another theory. I have a lot of these for some reason. But if you noticed, in terms of the booking, tonight was about the Raw wrestlers. In a lot of ways, in terms of rehabilitating Becky and Seth and getting the Fiend over and whatnot. This was about, you know, getting these guys over and setting Raw up for the future.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
The SmackDown stuff is sort of
you know, kind of in the midst, in the middle of
the OC,
right? Exactly, the OC as well, and SmackDown with the Kofi Randy feud and the Brian Roman stuff, and Bayley as champion. I mean, you know, Charlotte beat Trish, but that's more of an ongoing thing. It doesn't feel like a restart or a refresh. I think they're holding off on SmackDown stuff because we're not in Fox yet. And that's when we get sort of the SmackDown reboot or the SmackDown, you know what I mean? Like it's let's get Raw situated and settled tonight and we'll build and build for SmackDown. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that kind of reflects in the booking tonight. Tonight was about getting the Raw, you know, setting the stage for Raw. And SmackDown sort of still kind of transitioning right now.
SmackDown NXT have a lot in common in that regard too, because TakeOver the night before, you know, kind of had that same vibe in a way too, where, you know, a lot of the stuff was kind of in place. You know, it was
no title change. Nothing really happened. No title
changes, yeah.
In all honesty.
So, and they're getting ready to go to FS1, yes. You know, 2 days before SmackDown starts on Fox. So that's when they're going to do their big deal. More often than not, you know, they're all their big changes. So it's going to be interesting. Definitely going to be interesting to see what happens down the line. But yeah, Seth Rollins is back on top in a definitive way. So we'll see where they go from here. Raw is going to be very interesting tomorrow night. Definitely going to be a show you might not want to miss, folks. Definitely want to check that out to see where we go from here. All right. Well, let's give our final thoughts here, Devin. Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle. Where do you land on SummerSlam?
Thumbs up. I'm very happy to say this because it's a division that has been suffering since WrestleMania. But I'm very happy to say that of the three best matches, two of them were women's matches tonight. And they were legitimately great. And the Becky Daddy submission match and Charlotte Trish, third being Brock and Rollins. Those matches were awesome. You know, of course, Oney and Gulak was great too. I think that's a close fourth behind those other three. But I was very pleased to see that be the case. The women were on a roll last fall, and they had those two awesome title matches and that great finish to the Rumble match at the Rumble. And then the Mania build was a clunky, and we've had these kind of lousy women's divisions for the last 4 or 5 months, and I'm very happy to see the women killing it, man, and having awesome matches and being the highlights of the show again. That was one of the more exciting things, you know, and has been one of the more exciting things the last 5 years in WWE, and they're back at it again, and that's a good thing. Definitely a thumbs up, though. Great show.
I agree totally with that, and I agree with your sentiment about the women. And of course, I'm going to put over the whole Fiend situation. That was, like I said, a total home run on that. So that was great. And Brock and Rollins being awesome as it was, and Brock doing the clean job. You know, somebody, I think maybe our buddy Frey tweeted out that, you know, he was in the cage match, and in matches that Seth Rollins and Brock Lesnar have been in together, Seth Rollins is 4-2 against Brock.
Wow.
It's amazing to think about that. I mean, and you got guys like Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman. I wonder what they're thinking. They weren't even neither one on the show tonight. And it can't beat Brock Lesnar. But here's Seth Rollins getting two humongous wins on him in a very short time span. Amazing. Who would have thought? Who would have thought in Vince McMahon's World Wrestling Entertainment?
Not me.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't have done it either, personally. But
it's insane. It's insane. But again, like you said, I mean, the SmackDown crew was what it was tonight, basically a holding pattern. And Raw is on this way. It's bubbling. You know, things are happening. So, yeah, like I said, Monday night, Raw. Definitely check it out if you get the opportunity. All right. Well, that's it for us. We will be back in a month for the Clash of the Champions in Charlotte, which that's a nice location for that show with that name. Not bad at all.
No.
And in Crockett Country. So there we go. So we'll have that, and we'll see what happens then. So, for Devin, this is Chris saying so long from the Peach State of Georgia. Miles an hour, so everybody sees you. There's an air of love and of happiness, and this is the Fresh Prince's new definition of summer madness.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have over 24 podcasts available on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. We now offer them to you on two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, we dive into topics running the gamut from today's WWE to the glory days of yesteryear and the ins and outs of the territory days. In addition to our full-length shows, we also deliver to you special pod blasts on topics old and new.
The Place to Be Nation Pop feed is a veritable treasure trove of great content, offering tremendous shows covering the land of movies, television, life, comics, and sports, brought to you by the most knowledgeable and insightful folks in the podcast world.
You can find all these great shows, plus archives of our past podcasts from over the past 8 years as well, by subscribing to both feeds on iTunes. And while you're there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects, and much more. Be sure to support our site by using www.PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping. And we want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar, ProWrestlingOnly.com, and TheHistoryOfWrestling.com as well. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture.